The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, April 25th, 2024. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Room to Grow. District 87 teachers get first look at new Oakland Avenue building. By D. Jack Alkier. Bloomington. As she made her way to the commercial kitchen inside the Oakland Avenue building, a kitchen that will soon be hers, Kitty Belsley could hardly contain her excitement. Belsley is the culinary arts instructor at the Bloomington Area Career Center, and her current kitchen, located on the Bloomington High School campus, pales in comparison. Oh my goodness, she said, beaming from ear to ear. It's probably 20 times what I have, 20, 30 times what I have. It's crazy. Belsley and several dozen instructors in District 87 were invited Tuesday to tour the building at 2309 East Oakland Avenue that will be transformed into space for pre-kindergarten as well as technical vocational training spaces for the BACC. Gaining access to a commercial kitchen, which was built to serve 2,500 people a day, will benefit her students immensely, Belsley said. The experience they're going to gain and be exposed to here is like 20 levels up, she said. I'm lost for words. I really am. The Board of Education approved the $4.5 million purchase of the 250,000 square foot building in December, and in March entered an agreement with State Farm to lease back 60,000 square feet of space for the company to use at a cost of more than $700,000 per year. The OAB is situated on 19 acres southwest of State Farm's corporate headquarters. Dream big. After a lengthy period of board meetings, special legislation, and contract negotiations, the school district finally closed on the purchase of the Oakland Avenue building from insurance juggernaut State Farm for $4.5 million. Led by District Superintendent David Mauser and Chief Financial and Facilities Officer Michael Cornale, Tuesday's tour was the first for anyone in the district who was not part of those negotiations. What we can do is try to dream and think about what this could be for our kids in our community, Mauser said. Wendy Iverson, an instructional coach at Sarah E. Raymond School of Early Education, was one of those to get a first look at the new place. From the time our staff heard about this possibility, they have been dreaming and thinking about all the cool things they would love to have for their classrooms and be able to have available to their students. Oh my gosh, Iverson said, as she entered a room that could easily fit half of Raymond's current student body. These rooms are humongous. Several of the rooms in the OAB were set up for conference trainings for dozens, if not hundreds, of people in the insurance industry. There's going to be a nice long list of things we would like to have in a perfect world for our students. My God, it's huge, Iverson said, laughing at the stark comparison between the classroom space at Raymond and the possibilities of a life at the OAB. Instructors from the BACC and Raymond will get to meet with architects and construction managers to voice their needs and wishes for the OAB's transformation, Mauser said, once those contracts are finalized. Raymond teachers will have the first crack at those discussions, something that pre-K teacher Caitlin Taylor anticipates greatly. We're very anxious and excited that there is going to be time set aside to actually talk with the architects about the possibilities and things that we feel would be beneficial to our students and the teachers to make these rooms run smoothly, she said. Room to grow. One thing that most everyone agreed on, the space available at the OAB will let students spread out. Belsley said her students are cramped for space while learning cooking and knife skills, and there is still a wait list for students seeking culinary classes. I'm limited right now. I can't take everybody into my space right now because of safety issues, Belsley said. Some young children at Raymond have sensory needs that are not being met because of that school's space restrictions, Taylor said. Moving into the OAB, we can meet their sensory needs and not have us all crammed so close together to not overwhelm some of our students, she said. The OAB is also fully ADA compliant, Mauser said. That will help students with mobility difficulties gain more independence at an early age, Taylor said. It also allows programs to expand what they offer students, said criminal justice instructor Shana Cheatham. We do room cleaning, we do forensic stuff. So having labs that can ventilate properly, so we can use fingerprint powder, things like that, is really important for us, Cheatham said. In the future, Cheatham even envisions having mock trials and inviting judges and attorneys to talk to her students. This really opens up a lot of opportunities to give our kids more hands-on experience, she said. The OAB will also serve to centralize many programs that are currently held remotely, said Tammy Barba, a certified nursing instructor for the BACC. Right now, we are split between the BACC over at District 87 at the BHS campus and also Heartland Community College because there's not enough space, Barba said. Housing the CNA program in one place is not the only perk, Barba said. The OAB is also closer to Westminster Village, where the students do their clinical work, she said. Overjoyed. Bryce Hansen, director of the BACC, watched Tuesday as teachers' eyes lit up at the possibilities the OAB purchase and eventual transformation hold. Our teachers are really passionate about kids and about helping kids, he said. And so it's fun to see them excited. But ultimately, what they're excited for is, I can do this with my students, and that's really cool. That's what it's about. Bree Hubner has been at Raymond for 3 years and teaching early childhood education for 15. I'm just overjoyed, she said Tuesday. I'm actually a bit tearful because I'm just so excited to see this come to life, to be able to give all these children the opportunity to come to our school. I'm just so excited for it. As Besley approached her new kitchen, a voice in the crowd seemed to cheer on not only her, but the whole mission of the school district. Go, Kitty, go. The next story is entitled, Dutch Farms Makes Bid to Buy Oberweis Dairy, by Robert Chanik. Chicago. Oberweis Dairy, which filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection earlier this month, announced Tuesday that it has found a buyer for its century-old family business. Brian Boomsma, owner of Chicago-based Dutch Farms, made a stalking horse bid for nearly all of the operating assets of the company, with plans to operate and grow the business when it emerges from bankruptcy, Adam Kraber, president of Oberweis, said in a news release. We are thrilled to have a business leader like Brian Boomsma interested in investing in Oberweis and enabling the company to continue to move forward and prosper, Kraber said. We continue to be grateful to our loyal customers, vendors, and committed employees who have supported us through this process. A Dutch Farms representative confirmed the bid Tuesday, but declined further comment. No details about the offer were disclosed by either company. Oberweis Dairy filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection April 12th in Chicago after initially failing to find a buyer to rescue it from financial distress. The dairy, which has been losing money in recent years, owes more than $4 million to its 20 largest unsecured creditors and about $14 million in secured bank debt, according to bankruptcy filings. The company, known for its old-school bottled milk and ice cream, has 40 dairy stores that include Bloomington and Champaign, as well as the Chicago area, Northwest Indiana, Michigan, and St. Louis. It outsources some manufacturing but has a 27-year-old plant at its North Aurora headquarters. Started in 1915 by Peter Oberweis, an Aurora dairy farmer, the business grew from a single horse-drawn wagon to a multi-state enterprise with $95 million in revenues last year. But Oberweis Dairy has struggled in recent years due to increasing consumer demand for dairy alternatives, such as plant-based milk, as well as improvident capital expenditures, according to the bankruptcy filing. After four generations in family hands, Jim Oberweis, a Republican politician and grandson of the company founder, decided to sell the dairy last year. Oberweis Dairy notified the state earlier this month that it may lay off 127 workers at the North Aurora Dairy June 11th because of a plant closure, but made clear in a statement to the Tribune that the layoffs may not occur if a buyer is found. Founded in 1987 by brothers Brian and Bruce Boomsma, Dutch Farms remains a family-owned business whose branded offerings include cheese, eggs, milk, butter, and other dairy products. As a stalking horse bidder, the Dutch Farms owner set a minimum agreed price to buy the Oberweis Dairy assets, but left the door open to a higher offer. Oberweis Dairy said in its news release it expects to complete the reorganization process and emerge from bankruptcy under a new owner in late June. Late Tuesday, a potential rival bidder emerged, with the Hoffman family of companies, a Winnetka-based private equity firm, announcing it has entered discussions to acquire all of the assets of Oberweis Dairy through its investment arm, Osprey Capital. In a news release, the firm stated it intended to make a competitive offer to buy the company and was confident it would emerge as the highest bidder based on due diligence. Notwithstanding its recent financial struggles, we see an opportunity to revive the company's heritage of success, said Jeff Hoffman, co-CEO of Hoffman Family of Companies. This may take many different shapes or forms, and we are highly enthusiastic about the prospect of our involvement. The next story is headlined, "Illinois residents encouraged to destroy eggs of invasive insects," by Avani Kaura. Chicago. While Illinoisans were alarmed to learn the spotted lanternfly had been found in Illinois last year, experts say spring is the time to take action against that insect, as well as another damaging invasive species that has made far more inroads and gotten less attention. The spongy moth, formerly known as the gypsy moth, has been in Illinois for decades and can strip leaves and kill trees, sometimes defoliating large swathes of land. Catherine Bronski, a national policy manager with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, said while it's important to stop spongy moths from killing trees in the 20 states in which they are currently established, it's even more important to limit the insect's expansion across the United States. Bronski said spongy moths usually spread around the country in the form of egg masses. Egg masses get laid on everything, Bronski said. They can lay them on your barbecue or your backyard grill, on your patio furniture, things you'd think there'd be no way caterpillars could be on. Egg masses are usually a cream color, according to Greg Dwyer, a professor of ecology and evolution at the University of Chicago, and appear spongy with small holes across the surface. Both the spotted lanternfly and the spongy moth lay eggs in masses. But where the lanternfly may lay as many as 60 eggs, the moth can lay up to 1,000. These eggs begin hatching in spring, and the USDA is encouraging residents to report and destroy any eggs they find before the insects enter more destructive phases. Dwyer said spongy moths feed on a variety of hardwood trees, including oaks. In some states, including Michigan, the moth has caused significant damage to hundreds of thousands of acres of forest. The spongy moth is extremely voracious, Dwyer said, and sometimes it gets up to very, very high numbers and will deploy to vast areas. While Dwyer said many insects feed on foliage and trees, the moth poses a particular danger because of its sheer numbers and its preference for hardwood trees. Enough moths can eat the foliage on an entire tree, killing it over several years. The spotted lanternfly, on the other hand, prefers items like grapes, hops, and some hardwoods like walnut trees, according to Matthew Travis, the spotted lanternfly national policy manager at the USDA. These things are really important to a lot of communities, certainly to agricultural communities, Travis said. People rely on what those plants provide, whether that's grape juice or wine, and certainly hops and beer. So the spotted lanternfly has been known to really act as a big stressor. Travis said the spotted lanternfly reached Chicago in 2023 and was found near railroads, a primary pathway for invasive species. While it's not yet clear to what extent Illinois will see the lanternfly this summer, Travis said it's important to keep an eye out for the insect's harder, darker egg masses. Just this weekend, we saw hatching potential in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, Travis said, referring to the fact that those states are in the temperature range for the insects to hatch. It'll be some time before hatching hits the Chicago area, but in May, people can start looking for the insects and reporting those insects to their state Department of Agriculture. Tricia Bethke, the Morton Arboretum's Forest Pest Outreach Coordinator, said spongy moths are eliminated best as eggs. As soon as they hatch, they can feed off millions of trees due to their numbers. While they aren't the only factor that contribute to a decline in forest areas, spongy moths make a significant impact when paired with other ecological threats like climate change. It becomes a 1-2 punch, Bethke said. If the tree is being defoliated every single year, it will grow back smaller. It's like a bank account where you're taking out more money than you're putting in. Spongy moths usually exist in their caterpillar stage for about 7 weeks and are most active in the early summer months, according to Bethke. Adults emerge after 1 or 2 weeks and live just long enough to mate and lay eggs. Dead or dying trees have not been as much of a problem in Illinois as in surrounding states, Bethke said, because of a partnership between the USDA, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Illinois Department of Agriculture that calculates which of the state's counties are seeing the most moths. Early stage moths in those counties are sprayed with bacteria, preventing them from spreading. This year, Joe Davis County and Carroll County were identified as counties with elevated moth counts, Bethke said. Cook and DuPage counties have previously engaged in preemptive spraying, according to Bethke, and are now seeing fewer spongy moths. That preemptive spraying, as well as pheromone spraying and trapping, which stops the moths from mating, is why spongy moth numbers in Illinois have tended to stay low, Dwyer said. The reason why we're talking about it now is because the spring seasons are when we see the eggs forming, Dwyer said. The insect only got to the Midwest in the 1980s and has been gradually spreading across the country. The more moths that hatch, the more danger there is. When the spongy moths are eliminated in the egg stage, there is also less chance people might accidentally spread them, Bronski said. She said it's important for Illinois residents to keep an eye out for these masses, removing them from trees as well as outdoor items and furniture, and disposing of them in a sealed container. They are excellent hitchhikers, Bronski said. People don't even know that they're spreading them to new areas. It's really mandatory to look for these egg masses, scrape them off, and certify that you're moving household goods free of spongy moth egg masses. Next, we have an article entitled Ecology Action Center Sets Clean Water Event by Matus Janik. Normal. The Ecology Action Center and the Town of Normal will be hosting their first clean water informational event next month. The event, Ripple, will take place from 8 a.m. to noon, May 4th, at Fairview Park, 801 North Main Street. Event booths and activities will kick off at 8 a.m. Storytelling performances from Brian Fox Ellis will take place at 9 a.m. and 10:45 a.m., and live music from Twang will begin at 10 a.m. Attendees can learn about the local aquatic food chains, the history of municipal water systems, and modern wastewater management techniques with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, McLean County Museum of History, and Bloomington Normal Water Reclamation District. IDNR will also bring native fish for viewing. Among the highlights of Ripple, Illinois State University students will guide attendees in identifying macroinvertebrates from Sugar Creek. McLean County Ag in the Classroom will help youth create water cycle bracelets. And Children's Discovery Museum will lead a demonstration about how clouds are formed. Other organizations, including the Nature Conservancy, City of Bloomington, Parklands Foundation, University of Illinois Extension, Normal Public Library, and Wild Ones, will also be in attendance. Adult attendees will have the chance to win a rain barrel, and children attendees could win pool passes, courtesy of Normal's Parks and Recreation Department. For more information about the event, visit ripplemclean.org. Here's an item entitled, Man Charged with Burglary Gets Pretrial Release, by Drew Zimmerman. Bloomington. A Normal man accused of breaking into an apartment and stealing alcohol and a purse has been granted pretrial release. McLean County Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt said on Saturday, a Bloomington resident observed home security footage of an individual entering his apartment and taking a bottle of whiskey and a purse. Officers reviewed the footage and identified the individual as 35-year-old Davin Baker, He is charged with residential burglary, a Class 1 felony. During Baker's initial court appearance Tuesday, Fitt said defendant told police he stole the items and abandoned the purse after discovering there were only school papers in it. Assistant Public Defender Matthew Cutters argued for Baker's release and said the defendant has been trying to enter Chestnut Health Systems for substance abuse counseling. Judge Amy McFarland denied the state's motion for pretrial release. She said there is no evidence Baker has access to any weapons. The crime in question was one of opportunity, and it is unlikely the defendant poses a specific threat to the victim. As part of the pretrial conditions, Baker must obtain a substance abuse evaluation and comply with any recommended treatments. Baker's arraignment will be at 9 a.m. on May 30th. The next item is entitled, NCHS placed on hold Wednesday morning. Students, staff, safe. Normal. Normal Community High School experienced a hold procedure Wednesday morning in which students and teachers were directed to remain in their classrooms while staff worked to support a single student situation. In an email sent to parents, Director of Communications and Community Relations, Dana Brown, said all students and staff were safe and the hold procedure lasted from 9 to 10:15 a.m. During a hold, we clear all of our hallways and have students and staff remain in their classrooms, Brown wrote to parents. Classroom activity can continue to function as normal during this time. We simply wanted to create a safe space for our halls. And the next item is entitled, Road Closure Planned Thursday in Normal Near Shops at College Hills, by Matus Janik. Normal. There will be a road closure starting at 10 a.m. Thursday on Von Maur Drive between Crunch Fitness and Crumble at the Shops at College Hills to set up rooftop equipment with a crane. The road closure expected to be completed by noon Thursday, weather permitting. All local access will be maintained during this time. Drivers are urged to caution when traveling through the area. A map highlighting the road closure can be found online at www.arcg.is/08WQB0. Contact 847-650-2421 with any direct questions. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for April 25th. Please stay tuned.